You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. I'm David Ramil, a credentialed reporter and the host of Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Please make sure to subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts to get the latest episodes. I'm recording this on a Sunday afternoon. There's a lot that's gone on over the last few days. Kind of a microcosm of the last few months. It seems like just a few days and also an eternity has happened. Obviously, the league and the postseason was very much in doubt as players chose to strike to protest police brutality around the nation, to continue to bring awareness to the issues that impact not just the league and its players, but also the world around us. And then over the last couple days, we've gotten some resolution. And the playoffs are set to begin. Not only that, but an opponent has clearly been established. It's the Milwaukee Bucks. Now, a programming note, I did record an episode with my former co-host Wes Goldberg that I published earlier on Sunday. Be sure to check that out, as always, if you have not already. I recorded that one with him before the strike had taken place and before any opponent had been selected. So where it was very likely that Milwaukee was going to face Miami, we didn't know that for certain. And so a lot of the conversation was, you know, once Milwaukee moves past Orlando, and obviously since then they have. We also talked about the Pacers, and we also get into a little bit of trade talk. So make sure to check that out. But either way, we're moving forward. The Milwaukee Bucks are the next opponent. I'm going to be recording an episode later on today with host Kane Pittman of Locked On Bucks. So that's going to preview the series, and we'll get into predictions and everything else that we're looking for. So that's going to be a great show as well. So three episodes within 2 days. You can't beat that anywhere. Milwaukee, huge matchup. It's going to be a lot of fun to cover that series. I cannot wait to see what those matchups entail. It seems like we've been on a collision course with the Bucks all season long. It seems kind of inevitable that the very best team of the Eastern Conference would eventually match up with Miami, the team that has fared best against them amongst any team in the NBA, to be quite honest with you. So it's going to be a great series, a lot of fun matchups, a lot of key things to break down as far as from a coaching standpoint. So that's going to be really fun. And of course, as always, I'll be recapping every episode. I'll be talking to a couple of people who cover the Bucks, get their perspective on it as always. So that should be really fun. But I just wanted to get into a little bit about what happened following the strike. So obviously, we've heard a lot more coming out of that players-only meeting that took place Wednesday night. The Bucks were supposed to have played Wednesday afternoon. That game got postponed, and then there was a meeting that would take place Wednesday night, and then there were other meetings that took place over the course of the next couple of days. We've heard about LeBron's reported stance that he wanted some more action. And I totally understand that perspective from what we're hearing. And the Athletic's Shams Charania seems to have a direct connection to LeBron and his camp, and that's why he's been able to get that kind of information. LeBron didn't have an issue with what was going on with the Bucks. He was upset that the Bucks chose this without any kind of clear plan. They just kind of sat out the game and didn't know exactly where to take that next step. So there have been conversations with the Players Association president, Michelle Roberts, and as well as the NBA governors to kind of determine what the next step is. And, well, it's been a joint statement that has been released from the league and the National Basketball Players Association director, Michelle Roberts. So some general language. You've probably seen this again. I just kind of want to get into it a little bit. The first actionable item that they wanted to move forward to was that the NBA and the players have agreed to establish a, quote, social justice coalition with representatives from players, coaches, and governors that would be focused on a broad range of issues, including increasing access to voting, promoting civic engagement, and advocating for meaningful police and criminal justice reform. I'll take this step by step because as far as this first step is concerned, this sounds fine. I also don't agree that it's necessarily the best course of action. It seems like, well, we'll form a committee to move forward and see what we can do about making some change. Not change. And that's the problem, is that it's not actually going to change anything. And I don't know that there's any quick step here. Maybe this social justice coalition will be able to progress and move forward and take some action. We've already seen some reported interest from NBA owners and arenas around the NBA opening themselves up as polling stations. That's great. The Heat have shown interest for a couple of months now. Unfortunately, local politics have prevented the organization from moving forward, although they do own the arena. I think there's a joint connection there with Miami-Dade County in particular. And that's rather unfortunate that the Heat can't move forward as much as they'd want to. Now, you have to understand here, at least from my perspective, and I don't think I'm reporting anything or saying anything that isn't public knowledge, there seems to be a general conflict there. I think most governors or owners of these teams tend to lean towards the conservative, more right-wing establishment as far as politics are concerned, and their best interests, financial especially, are preserved mostly by those right-wing interests. And so I don't know that they're going to rock the boat, especially when it comes to their money and one of their key money-making establishments, which is each and every team that they own. So I don't know how much progress is going to be made. Like, I'd love for Mickey Arison, as good an owner or governor as he might appear to be, as well-connected with players as he is, he's also a fairly well-known conservative, and he may not want to rock the boat again, as I said, no pun intended, as the president of Carnival Cruise Lines, but he may not want to actually move forward with any kind of initiatives that change things, or he may not want to criticize police force. And I'm just not sure that this is going to progress anything. I'm not sure that this is going to make any actual change. So it sounds great on paper. It sounds, look, we're going to address these issues. We're going to put people together in a room and have them talk and connect and see what we can do to move forward. I'm not sure that I necessarily buy it. The second actionable item is, again, that wherever a city or league franchise owns and controls the arena property, team governors will continue to work with local elections officials to convert the facility into a voting location. That's the second item. Again, 8 teams so far, another 22 teams kind of sitting around going, well, either we can or we don't want to. And that's not nearly enough. And again, as we're starting to hear more and more, and this has been an ongoing issue for a long time, but it's even worse now during the current regime, presidency. I think what we're starting to see is that voting suppression has been long in action, and people who want to vote, and generally who want to vote for Democratic candidates or things of that sort, have not been able to. And we're talking about rural communities, we're talking about lower income communities, we're talking about minority diverse communities. They don't have the access to good voting facilities, or there are going to be concerns about waiting in line, waiting in the hot sun, especially down in the South, where I'm sure anybody from Miami can understand what it's like to stand out in the sun for 5 minutes, much less 5 hours, just to place a vote that may not seem like it's going to be, well, changing anything. And I disagree with that. Let me reiterate that I do think voting is very important. And so make sure that you can, if possible, go out there and vote either by mailing in a ballot or doing anything else. So I'm not sure what's going to happen next. It's like we're already starting to see how voting suppression is taking place. And for these owners or arenas to be opened up sounds great. But it's not nearly enough. We need to get more. I mean, I don't know if it's local businesses. I don't know what can happen here in order to move this forward. But it seems like 8 out of 30 teams isn't enough, at least not for my liking. So I'm hoping that they'll be able to initiate some more change in this regard. I get it. It's a step. It's not a very big one. And so I kind of don't like it. The league will work with players and our network partners to create and include advertising spots, in each NBA playoff game dedicated to promoting greater civic engagement in national and local elections and raising awareness around voter aware access and opportunity. Again, this is fine. This is putting out another message. It seems a lot like, let you put a message, an approved message on your jerseys and, you can choose from a handful of these messages. Sorry, Jimmy Butler, you can't leave your name blank there. You have to have something on the back of your jersey. So I like that the league is going to move forward with some kind of advertising. We'll see. I have not watched any of the playoff games as of this recording, so I can't tell you what those commercials have been like. Although, as many, I assure you, are watching these playoff games, they can mute these commercials. I would love for them to have some kind of far-reaching impact. I just don't see it, and I'm a little upset. I think these are steps. I'm not criticizing the players for rushing back too quickly. I'm not criticizing the Players Association for having some kind of an actionable plan here. At the same time, I just see what this plan is, and I'm not exactly in agreement that it's going to be as progressive as we'd like it to think. And look, the league took a first. I'm sorry. This is another point of contention that you've probably seen also, is that the league and players seem to be, I'm sorry, the league seems to be getting credit for something the players did. This was George Hill. This was Sterling Brown. This was the Milwaukee Bucks saying, you know what, I don't feel comfortable playing. And the league seems to be taking credit for it. So it's a little bit of a concern. The league always seems to walk a fine line. Again, Adam Silver, for all of his liberal leanings on some occasions, I believe he also tends to represent, he has to represent a mostly conservative ownership group. And being the case, he's going to have to walk a fine line, and he can give the appearance, and I think this is something that's been stipulated before, he can give the appearance of being progressive, of moving forward, and at the same time, not giving all that much. This plan is more than, say, Major League Baseball or NFL or certainly the NHL have been willing to do. It's also not as progressive as it really could be. There has to be more. Like, the players have to have some kind of accountability. And look, there's been a lot of players, notably Miami's own Udonis Haslam, who said, you know, this is our platform. We don't want to erase this, and we want to be able to continue to make money and to be able to show, as we're putting on this product as entertainers, that we have concerns about the way this country is being run. At the same time, they're kind of being muted, I think. They're not being as progressive as they could be. And so I'm not sure what the final resolution is going to be. The league has done something, and we've gotten games going again. So I feel the players have kind of just said, well, this is the best we can do. Now, I will also say that there are lingering concerns, something I'll bring up in the next segment, because, I mean, we've asked players, we've had a couple of media sessions since then, and I've asked players specifically about the impact of, you know, the world around them and how it's changing their perspective and whether or not they're focused on the league and basketball, considering so much of what's going on in the world around them. And I'll kind of get into that in the next segment. I just wanted to talk a little bit about what certain Heat players have been doing as they've been part of the forefront of this issue. And of course, I'll be looking ahead to the playoff series with the Milwaukee Bucks. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Make sure to subscribe to the show on your favorite app to listen to podcasts, and always get the latest episodes by asking your smart device to play Locked On Heat when you get in your car to get your team every day. Kind of just wrapping up the last couple of days as far as the NBA's plan to move forward. And one of the things that I wanted to address was not just this season, which of course seems to be moving forward, and the Heat continue with their hopes of winning an NBA title. At the same time, we have to look forward to next season, and not looking forward in the sense that, well, I can't anticipating it, but also planning for it. And one of the things that seems to be not talked about as much as we're kind of patting ourselves on the back and saying, look, we're making progress, look, we're doing things, there seems to be a very realistic possibility of a lockout looming in the distance. And that's something that we have to do a better job of covering, because I think it's very, very realistic. Not only is it a real concern for players moving forward that they don't necessarily want to play for this league, they don't necessarily want to play and continue to distract from the larger issues at hand, I just also think that there's going to be incredible financial ramifications as this pandemic looms over everything and impacts everything as far as your ability to make money, to put food on your table on a just common level for all of us. Even the league is going to be suffering dramatically. And so while we're all, and it's very, very fun, for believe me, it's fun to kind of look forward and say, oh, we're going to have X millions of dollars of cap space to sign Giannis Antetokounmpo in a couple of years. No one knows that for certain. That salary cap situation is going to be drastically changed from where we see it right now. And that was certainly using the numbers that we were kind of looking forward to, again, in March of this year. Now, those salary cap numbers are going to take a hit. We don't know. Nobody knows, because we're not sure how much money the league is making off of the bubble, off of the playoff situation, which is very much still moving forward. So, you know, the lockout is an issue because we're not sure what's going to happen with this league that we all like to follow and cover and talk about. And you know, players, again, are going to have off-the-court issues that they're going to want to see addressed. The money's going to be a problem. It's going to mean that there's going to be some changes to rosters. There's going to be, you know, the Players Association and the NBA governors, I'm sorry, might also say, look, if you're not willing to play under these rules, then we're just going to lock you out. And that means that the players won't get money. And the issue, one of the things that always upsets me when you look at lockouts and things of that sort, is that players are viewed as greedy. Oh, millionaires, they have so much money, etc. Well, the billionaires that own these teams, they're fine financially. They can afford to take the hit. A lot of these players, while they don't necessarily live paycheck to paycheck, they are supporting a lot of people in their lives. They might be supporting very small businesses that are taking off. They might be supporting cousins and wives and family members and certainly children and things of this sort. And we've all seen a number of cases of players that aren't, you know, financially lucrative, that they don't make as much money as we think. And I've broken this down before and I'll do it again. You see a $1 million contract, you think, well, that player makes $1 million. No. On top of the fact that they're, you know, a big portion of that, let's say 40%, is getting taxed, that leaves $600,000. Then you have to deal with an agent. That's another 10%. So of your $1 million, that's another $100,000 that's getting taken out. So you're down to five, half as much. That's before you've even started spending any money. Rookies are often expected to foot the bill on things just because that's the lifestyle of the NBA is like, well, you know, you're here, go buy some donuts, go buy some things, go buy, you know, Chick-fil-A. We've seen this a number of times. It's quote unquote hazing. It's also just a ritual of passage in the NBA. They spend money on these things. And then you also get a guy who is, you know, 19, 20 years old. He wants to look as sharp as, say, 10-year veteran, you know, Jimmy Butler or something like along those lines. And so you want to be able to spend the same kind of money. Well, you can't afford those cars. You can't afford that house or that lifestyle. And so you're kind of spending beyond your means, which is a problem. And you're not sure whether or not your contract is going to continue much beyond your rookie contract. Something that I've, again, stipulated many times is the average NBA player's career lasts 4.5 years, probably a little less, and probably significantly less moving forward, considering how the pandemic is impacting everything. And so, you know, you get 4.5 years. You can make a great chunk of change during that amount of time. And at the same time, a lot of that money goes elsewhere. Look, you're getting friends, you're getting family saying, look, we're going to be part of your entourage. We're going to be part of your group. Can you take care of us? Can you buy us dinner? Can you, you know, buy us these things? Can you pay for a night out in the club? Can you buy me a car? Can you help me get, you know, $100,000 to launch my business? Can you help me launch a clothing line? Can you help me do this? And players being very susceptible to these kinds of things give away a lot of more money than they should. And so what looked like $1 million on paper actually turns out to be significantly less. And so they are, in effect, living paycheck to paycheck. And so that's a problem. They're going to have to cave in a lot sooner than billionaires that have large corporations behind them or have made a lot of money over the course of their lives. They can sit tight. They don't have to make money off of the league and its games, although they do make a shit ton of money off those games. The players themselves are probably going to have to cave in. And so we'll see what happens in the future. I'm just putting these things out there because as much as we're looking now at the games and the playoffs and Giannis Antetokounmpo and everything else, there's also a very bleak future that might be impacting the league in general. So that's something to consider. I also wanted to get into a little bit about the role that Udonis Haslem and Andre Iguodala have been playing over the last few days. It's been, I personally find it very great to be able to cover a team with Udonis in particular and Andre to a lesser extent. Look, Andre has had some issues. He's made some comments recently about WNBA player that have been concerning. I think a lot of that may have been a slightly exaggerated. It was a step that he needed to take a little differently. He didn't exactly apologize for it. And then, of course, there have been other things in his past that have been a little concerning. Some homophobic comments regarding his daughter and how she was being raised in the WNBA. I don't want to rehash that because it doesn't seem like it really has made any change. But in hearing him talk, I have to be honest with you, he's come across, at least to me, as very, very progressive and a very good speaker on behalf of a number of issues impacting the league, the players, and the black men that comprise most of the NBA. And so I think it's been really fascinating to see him on CNN and other outlets be such an outspoken voice for the league and for its players. It's been interesting to see his development this way. And I know a lot of that is due to his role in the Players Association, but I haven't seen Chris Paul be nearly as outspoken as Andre is. And so whether it's just the way things have worked out or whether Andre feels more comfortable, I'm not sure. But either way, he's been it's been interesting to see him take this next step as a leader and as a voice. And we've already seen Serge Ibaka of the Toronto Raptors tweet something out in support of Andre and how great he's been. And I think this has a cumulative effect around the league as they see Andre representing the Heat be this kind of outspoken leader. I think it bodes well for the franchise and for Andre's future moving forward. But let's move on from that. Similarly, Udonis Haslam, a voice that stood up to LeBron James or wanted more clarification. We've also seen some reports that he kind of put Patrick Beverley down in his place when Beverley may or may not allegedly had talked down to Michelle Roberts, the president of the NBA Players Association. So, you know, if Beverley's comments were true, and we've got conflicting reports about it, either way, he was in the wrong. If they are true, for Udonis to be the kind of person that he's been very, very supportive. He's been trying to do the best possible. He has a veteran voice that means a lot in this league, and I think it's been great to kind of see this continuous impact from him. How he's just been, well, just so much fun to watch. Honestly, over the course of his career, just evolve, be direct, be straightforward. These are all things that I appreciate as a person, and to see this embodied from an NBA player. I know a lot of you have been critical about Udonis and why he has a role in this team. I will never criticize any reason why he has a role in this team. And I also want to answer a question from Claudia, who sent one in after I tweeted something in support of Udonis Haslam. She asked whether or not Udonis would consider returning. Who knows? If I was asked this in February, I would have said yes. Although maybe if they had won a championship, if things had progressed as normally and they win or had won a championship, he probably would have been more likely to retire. But given the bizarre nature of this past calendar year, the past 8 months and everything that's happened during that course of time, I'm not sure. I feel like the death of Kobe Bryant, if nothing else, was a reminder to NBA players that their time is brief and they may not want to, quote-unquote, waste that time or spend it anymore as part of the league when they are being asked to regularly neglect having a parental role or a husbandly role or just a familial one. The league takes up so much of your time, whether it's practicing or traveling or anything else, that you blink, and next thing you know, those 4.5 years that comprise the average career have passed very quickly, and your children are grown, or something has happened, and your wife has grown distant, et cetera, et cetera. We've heard a lot of those stories. I've heard a lot of those stories personally about how difficult it is for players to age. And while they may be concerned about what happens next, I think Udonis is pretty well established, not just financially, but as a person, where he has enough interest outside of basketball that helped define him, something I've asked him about specifically, that I think he's going to be okay moving forward. And so right now, if I had to guess, I'd say UD's done. But I think he's also, if not necessarily enjoying this part of his career, it's been very interesting. And again, he continues to be productive in many, many ways, even if they're not on the court, and he's functional. He's a leader, and that means something. That means something to media, means something to fans, and it means something to the men that comprise the NBA. He is a voice that represents leadership and experience and knowledge, and I think that that's good for Udonis and for him to be able to continue to pass that voice along. I don't see him getting into coaching, not right away. Maybe down the road. He's just not that guy. He really isn't. I think as much as he likes the idea of telling players what to do and how to improve, he's more of a psychological, emotional mentor rather than a player development guy. He's not going to help you work on your shot and things of that sort. Although I think he'll miss the camaraderie of traveling and being in the locker room, I don't see coaching in his future. We'll see what he can choose, whatever role he wants, and he'll get it within the Miami Heat organization. So that's a topic for another day. I'm going to move forward now and talk a little bit about the Miami Heat schedule and, of course, how they face the Milwaukee Bucks in just a few hours. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Reminder that you can all always, reach me via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or via Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat. The Heat schedule is out. They play the Milwaukee Bucks the first time on TNT within the Orlando bubble at 6:30 on Monday, August 31st. So by the time you're hearing this, just a few hours away, they'll be tipping off against the Milwaukee Bucks. And a couple days later, also at 6:30 p.m. Wednesday against the Milwaukee Bucks. Friday, September 4th, at a time yet to be determined. So far, only the first two games have been set as far as their times. A lot of that has to do with the other teams that are in the bubble and playing for a playoff spot. We're not sure exactly if Miami is going to be the big ticket item that they're going to want to put on national television at a different slot. Either way, all these games are going to be on TNT or ESPN moving forward. No longer will you get any Fox Sports coverage, unfortunately, because I've enjoyed seeing John Crotty and Eric Reed in particular talk about these games, and that's going to be different. I'm hoping that we'll get a lot of Stan Van Gundy and not so much Chris Webber. I like Chris the player. I don't necessarily like Chris the broadcaster, although he did have some poignant remarks regarding the player strike and the Black Lives Matter movement. So I have to tip my hat to him. I think he just gets a little put on the spot when he's talking about gameplay and different things of that sort. He tends to get a little cliche. Look, it happens. As somebody who has to talk about sports pretty regularly, I sometimes feel I'm not very good at it either. And so I totally understand. And Chris, without a background in media, certainly is at a somewhat of a disadvantage. That's neither here nor there. The fact is that we're playing the Bucks. I mean, I'm going to save a lot of my thoughts regarding Milwaukee for the preview that I'll be recording in just a few hours with Kane Pittman of Locked On Bucks. So make sure you check that out. It's huge. It feels really, I don't know. It feels like a really big playoff series here because to paraphrase something that Weber said somewhat mistakenly, the winner of this series likely will represent the Eastern Conference in the playoffs. Now, it looks like Boston has Toronto's number. I think Boston might be able to advance past the Raptors pretty easily, given the way they've played them throughout the regular season. If that's the case, the Celtics represent a challenge against either Miami or Milwaukee. And that's even without Gordon Hayward in the lineup. Kemba Walker, obviously very dangerous. Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, both guys that can be very dangerous. Although Miami did beat them during the seeding games, that doesn't mean anything. Miami's also beaten Milwaukee twice, and I wouldn't think that that's the case moving forward. This is a big matchup. We're starting to get a pretty wide cross-section of NBA pundits from ESPN and other places that are looking at Miami as a possible winner. Also, Milwaukee potentially moving past Miami, not necessarily rather quickly. I saw one ESPN reporter say Bucks in five. The consensus seems to be Heat in six, Bucks in six, Bucks in seven, Heat in seven, somewhere along those lines. Nobody is predicting a sweep, and for good reason. These are two teams, both with some depth. Miami's depth, obviously, a little greater. Milwaukee's talent, arguably, a little higher because Giannis, being the MVP that he is the best player out on the floor. And, you know, it may be, again, a little cliched, but the team with the best player has the best chance of winning moving forward because you can put that ball in out of DeCumpo's hands, and he's going to create something out of nothing. Now, he does not have the consistent shot to do so, but he can get to the line. He can create action off of pick and roll. He can also just get downhill and lead fast break opportunities. He is a very, very, very good player. There's no doubt about that. So he is very dangerous. And given that, it's going to be difficult to contain him. And that's where everything starts, is being able to limit Adetokounmpo to some degree and then hope that other players will have to break you, whether it's a Brook Lopez or a Chris Middleton in particular, maybe even an Eric Bledsoe or guys like that, and to some lesser degree. It's going to be a lot of fun. Even talking about this and thinking about it, I think I speak for a lot of you all that I get a little excited, a little nervous covering this level of Heat basketball. I didn't, you know, the playoffs against the Pacers was a fun series. It was great to kind of see how Miami would be able to handle a dismantled Pacers team that was going through some losses in terms of personnel. They handled them pretty quickly. And even though I maintained that Miami did not play as well as they could, they were still able to sweep the Pacers. They never really felt pressed, at least not to me. I've been covering this team for a while. I've been watching this team for a long time. And while this is a new iteration of it, they just never seemed like they were nervous about anything moving forward. It's like, well, even if we lose a lead, even if the Pacers somehow come back, we could turn it up a notch. And they did. And they were able to turn it up a notch just enough to be able to beat Indiana in four straight games. They cannot make those same mistakes against Milwaukee. This is not breaking news here. The reality is that the Bucks are much better. And if you relinquish a lead, there's a good chance you're not going to be able to get it back. Look, you look at the first game of the season, or one of the first games of the season where you beat Milwaukee. Was that an overtime game? I think it was, yes. With Justice Winslow and no Jimmy Butler. Different, very, very different game, very different teams. If I'm going to give Miami one edge, and my former co-host Wes Goldberg mentioned it was probably coaching, I think the bubble is going to be a concern. I think this is a Milwaukee team that thrives a little bit more on home court advantage, and they don't have that. They played all season long to be the best team in the Eastern Conference, and ultimately it doesn't necessarily mean anything because they don't have a home court to play in front of. Giannis isn't going to get cheered by anybody. They're not going to get a refereeing advantage. It's going to be interesting to see who gets to the line more, either Jimmy or Giannis. Right now, it's Jimmy. Giannis doesn't have to get to the line that much. He's just so big, quick, and agile that he can get past most defenders without necessarily drawing contact. So that's going to be an interesting subplot to the series. Just so much to get into, and I don't know that I have a list of everything that I'm very curious about moving forward. There are going to be so many great matchups, so many little great things to look out for. It's going to be a lot of fun. And I'm hoping that I'll get a little bit more clarification on the Bucks side of things after I talk to Locked On Bucks later on today, because obviously he'll know a lot more about what drives Milwaukee, what potential challenges they have. Their bench has not been great. We're not sure what Chris Middleton is going to show up. There's a very, very good Chris Middleton that often shows up. There's been another version that has not been there during most of the playoffs and most of his career. And so that's a concern for Milwaukee Bucks fans, is whether or not Middleton is going to step up, quote unquote, and show up during the playoffs against Miami. I'm sure that the Heat will do something to try and limit his touches. I think there's also going to be changes to the rotation. I would not be surprised to see Myers Leonard get significant playing time, if not start altogether. I think he's just a big body who can stretch the floor, and he can stay with Lopez and draw him away from the paint. So that's something that I'm kind of hanging my head on as far as a quote-unquote prediction for this series, is that I think Myers is going to get a lot more playing time than he didn't get any playing time against the Pacers or during the seeding games. He played very, very little. I just don't think I think this is a matchup that suits him and he can benefit from, and the Heat can benefit from. I've also said on a recent podcast when I spoke to Miami Heat UK podcast, I think Heat in six. I really do believe that they have a very good opportunity. I said Heat in six against the Pacers. That wound up being a sweep. I hope it's a sweep now, too. I hope Miami winds up beating Milwaukee in four straight games. They've got the personnel. They've got the coaching. I think they can pull it off. I don't think it's necessarily as great an upset, especially because the bubble renders everything neutral. It's not the same kind of impact as having to travel, having to go to a different city, having to establish yourself. You've been there in this bubble, and Miami, something that we keep hearing from players on this Heat roster, is they are ready for this. They are ready for this challenge of moving forward. They are built for this, and I think they're going to find a way to overcome the Milwaukee Bucks. It's going to be really interesting. Just a reminder, you can always reach out to me via Twitter or on Gmail. A couple people I've talked to via phone, and I always appreciate that. Be sure to subscribe and follow this podcast to get the latest episode of Locked On Heat as soon as it's out. You can always leave a review on iTunes. I love to read those. I got a lot of positive feedback about a recent podcast that I did, and I appreciate everybody's support through my discussions of what is a very difficult subject, and one that doesn't impact me the same way it does many people in this country. And I'm glad I was able to at least lend my voice and hopefully spur some change to a lesser degree. I'm David Rommel, signing off and thanking you for your